Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Yat-A, hello and welcome to Native Veteran Art Voices of the Four Corners. This is your host, Vinaya Yazi. Today we have a guest from the Navajo Nation who is an artist and veteran of the U.S. military. His name is Nate Nez. Welcome and good morning, Nate.
Good morning. This is Nathan Nez from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Thank you again for interviewing me for another episode. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, it's really good to hear you. And I hope that you're prospering in the new year with your art and your overall experience being an artist within our Four Corners community location in New Mexico. You know, what is your history of your service and your connection to the U.S. military?
So I am a veteran of the United States Army. I enlisted back in 1999 to 2004. And I did 4 years in Texas and 1 year in Iraq. Then I got out and just been living life ever since. So when I enlisted as a 13 Bravo, which is a cannon crew member, artillery. My first station was for basic training was Fort Sill, Oklahoma. It was something different because I've never been to Oklahoma. So I remember the very first time when I got off the plane in Oklahoma City and I walked out and bam, I got hit by that humidity. And I was like, whoa. But it was like towards the end of summer when I enlisted, so it was hot and humid in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And then I also did my AIT there in Fort Sill as well. So I did my basic and my AIT both in the same place. So it was nice.
Yeah, so that way you kind of created a community, people you know in that same place.
Yeah, so it was the good thing about having basic training and AIT together was it was a longer training process, so all the people that I went to basic and AIT with, majority of them went to Fort Hood, Oklahoma with me, that we all got stationed there, and so we all continue our little friendship there, and to this day, there's still a few of us that keep in contact, so it's kind of created a lifelong, like a brotherhood society, as you would say.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, most veterans that I've been able to talk to, whether they're male or female, they always talk about that brotherhood or that sisterhood that was created within that military community. And, you know, it seems like really when you leave there, it's you make contacts and sometimes you stay in touch with those certain people that, you know, I think it's probably because they relate to what you all went through, your experience.
Yes.
So after you were there in Oklahoma, then that's when you are finished with the military training there, then the next step is you go and off into another foreign land?
So after my training, I actually got stationed in Fort Hood, which was my first duty station. So I was actually went from Oklahoma to Fort Hood, Texas, and that was my first duty station there. And that's where my real job began. Training and working and living and just everything was in Fort Hood, Texas, and it was pretty nice because to me it was considered like the largest military base because there was two units there. There was 1st Cavalry and 4th ID. I was stationed in 4th ID, so it was like a whole new world to me because everything was there. Like every job you can think of was provided there, and I was like, oh wow. More to just this. And we did a lot of training in the field and rain, snow, mud, hot, dry, no matter what we did, we trained. And it was like
gaining all kinds of new experience living within that community, right? Because isn't it closed off a lot of times?
Well, it was really open until after 9/11 happened and everything was closed off and everything. I remember before 9/11, there was a lot of ways to get on and off the military base. But after all that happened, there was only like two ways to get in and on. I was like, man, this made It made life a lot more hectic because now you weren't just able to just drive off anywhere you wanted to.
That's probably almost like the idea of lockdown when we went through in 2020.
I still remember that whole day of 9/11 when I was in the military, and I was like, wow.
You know, you don't think about that. You know, we as, quote, civilians, you know, we experienced 9/11, but I can't even imagine how it was for you all when you were in the military, because that was like right at your front door.
Yeah, I remember waking up in the morning, and this was after our PT. We got dressed, and I was on my way to the chow hall, and everybody was like freaking out. I said, what's going on? Got into the chow hall, and then I see it on TV, and I was like, whoa. And we all got alerts on our phone, and it's funny because this is when cell phones were just kind of coming around, and so we all didn't have the unlimited minutes and unlimited texts until after 9.
Really?
So everybody was like, oh man, we got a text alert and stuff. And so, but yeah, we spent the whole day just in one place and like, okay, what's going to happen? What's going to go on? Where are we going to go? Are we going to war? Are we going to lockdown? And it was just a day to remember that day.
During those times when you have news that comes up so urgent like that, you know, and you mentioned it was barely where cell phones were coming around, were you able to get in touch with your family? And, you know, what is your experience with family, your family in the military service?
Well, with me, it was kind of, I would just call home every now and then, and I would go down to, like, there was a little phone call center, and there was, like, a little booth that was set up, and there was, like, probably, I think there was, like, 10 little small booths set up there, and we would get a calling card, and we would just go walk down there and call our family and stuff, and so that was the only time I would call my family, is that, like, on the weekends when I knew my mom was home or just things like that. And so those are the only times I would call home was on weekends.
To keep in touch, huh? Was your family ever in the military as far as like, you know, generation?
My uncle has served in the military. I believe he did in the Army, like they didn't really know his job. He had stories like he had joined the military, but he didn't stay too long. Because this was, let me see, my uncle, I think he served like, I would probably say 1950s or 1960s, right? And nobody really knew anything about his story or nobody really knew where he went. But when he passed away and my mom started trying to find more information on where he was or his military records and stuff, we found out that he actually went to Germany and he was stationed in Germany for about a few months, and then after that he came back and then he was discharged from the military.
So that was like probably the first family member to go out of the nation of Navajo and then the United States.
And it was funny because nobody ever knew another, like that, like he didn't have no cell phones or he didn't have no letters or nothing. He was just kind of just joined up and just left, and then he came back and they were like, where were you at? And he was like, oh, I had joined the military, but then I got out. And
how amazing is that? You know, now we're so connected to the computer, to the phone. Everybody knows where we're at every second of the day. And, you know, back then in the 50s, people didn't, I mean, if you were gone, they're like, I don't know where they're at. You know, well, that's an amazing story. You know, he must have had a real adventure.
He never really talked about it, though. Like, he never really said, I went over here, I got on a plane and went to a different country. Like, I think he was so shocked. He had a really bad problem with alcohol, and so I think that's one of the reasons why he never really spoke about it.
It's great that you have that story, though, in your family about your uncle. You know, Nate, how did you make a decision to go and join the military? Because that's always a question I think you guys get asked a lot. You know, how did that happen?
So it all started when I was in eighth grade. I think I was in my homeroom class in the morning. There was a TV on in the classroom, and I was sitting there, and I'm just all of a sudden I see this tank just come out of the bushes, and it's driving, and it shows like it's blowing stuff up, right? And being in the eighth grade and growing up in the Navajo Nation, we were used to like throwing the rocks off the canyon or being destructive, you know, and so seeing this tank blow up things, and like, oh man. And so I remember, so I was like, I'm gonna join the Army. That's what I want to do. I want to be able to blow stuff. I want to do drive that. I want to do this and that. And so like in eighth grade is when I had my mind set up that I wanted to join the military. And I remember my family didn't really believe me. Like, oh, you're not going to do the, you're not going to join the military, because I was a pretty bad juvenile delinquent, you would say. I was always getting into trouble. I was always fighting and doing things that like normal teenagers do. And so my family was like, oh, you're not going to join the military. Oh, you're not going to do that. And secretly, I wanted to. And so when I graduated high school, I worked for the summer. Then after that, I was like, okay, I'm off. And I remember I told my family, I was like, hey, let's go to Albuquerque. Let's go eat and have some fun and let's go. So I remember it was me, my mom, my stepdad, my grandma, my little brother, my aunt, and my cousin. Then we all came to Albuquerque, right? And I was like, yeah, let's go over here real quick. Let's go downtown real quick. So we went downtown, and I got to go inside this building here. I got to do the test, and then I'll see you guys in about an hour. And they're all, like, confused. Like, okay. I was like, yeah, I'll be done in an hour. So I went in there, and I did my MEPS test, and I did a physical and everything. And then after that, we went to the zoo, and they were all still, like, wondering what's going on. And then I said, all right, well, let's go to the airport. And I'm like, what? And we got to the airport. I told him, I was like, I'll see you guys later. I said, I enlisted in the Army and I'm off.
Wow. Wow. What a surprise.
Yeah. And they were like, what? And I was like, yeah, I enlisted in the Army. I'm off to basic training. And I remember I was all nervous.
Yeah, I bet. Because you're leaving, you know, your family and, you know, you're going to a place that you've never been to, which is still in the Southwest. But I can imagine, Nate, you know, and I think that's something to say about your own personality and your drive and your spirit, because you wanted an adventure and you knew that, you know, this would suffice for you as far as being in the military. And so you went ahead and did that. And it's really interesting, you know, I think most, you know, natives and most artists, we always have this drive within our deep, deep down. And if we say we're going to do it, we're going to do it. And nothing can stop you once you believe in yourself, you know, for that dream. What a really good story, you know, you told about that, because everybody who goes in the military, there's a different experience. You know, some people, they don't have that kind of confidence to go, where they're just like, I'm going to go. Talking about the military, maybe like in the beginning, or if you want to go right into when you went overseas, but what is one of the negative or positive experiences you had?
Okay, so I remember one of my very first negative experience was, because growing up on the reservation, I never really experienced, as you would say, racists or being an outcast or anything like that, right? Because I grew up around a lot of the Navajos. I went to boarding school, and everybody I knew there were Navajos, and we all talk Navajo and everything. And so when I first got to when I got to Fort Sill, and I saw a lot of different ethnicities, different race, and everybody had their own little clique, and I was like the only little Navajo guy there, and I was like, oh wow, and I'm an outcast. And so it was funny, because then two other native guys, one from Alaska and one from Oklahoma, and so we kind of just bonded together with three natives and then against everybody else. And everybody encouraged their own ethnicity to do better than the next. And so those three little native guys were encouraging each other to push ourselves and to be better than everybody else. And it was nice. And then when I got to Fort Hood, it was the same way. Like, I was the only Navajo guy there. And right off the top, like, as soon as I got there, like the next day, everybody that was there was all like, oh, he's a native guy and he's just going to be drinking and he's going to get kicked out of the military and he's not going to last, because there was another native guy that was in that unit before me. And I guess all he did was just drink and drink and drink. So they eventually kicked him out of the Army. And so they just automatically assumed that that's what I was going to do. They already assumed that that's who I am. I beat those odds by making it through, and they're like, oh.
You overcame those stereotypes. So one of the things that you mentioned earlier is that you did go overseas, and did you say you had went to Iraq?
After 9/11, my unit got deployed to Kuwait. We stationed in Kuwait for a few days, and then we went into Iraq from Kuwait, and we drove all the way into Baghdad, and we stayed in Baghdad, on the north side of Baghdad, for a few days, and we made our way up towards Samarra, and then from there, we traveled to Crete, and into Crete, we were on the outside, we were providing fire support for the infantry. We stayed there for, I'll say, a few weeks. When they finally called ceasefire, that's when we went down south, a little farther down south to a little small town. We set up camp there. I guess it was like an old military base that the Iraqis had. And so we set up our little perimeter there, and we put all our equipment there. We settled in and made our little houses inside the buildings. So it was really nice, and we spent the rest of the year there. We did a lot of patrols. We did a lot of foot patrols in the little villages. The thing about the town that we were in was that was Saddam's hometown, where he grew up as a little kid. And so he had a lot of strong connections to Saddam in that village that we were in. So a lot of times we would come under fire. We had a lot of IEDs, and that's interesting. And then I remember in December, we started getting a lot of IEDs. We started getting a lot of fire. And so we were like, I bet you he's in the area somewhere, and that's why people are protecting him. And sure enough, the one night we did a perimeter guard. They were like, yeah, we need you guys on this side. And they have boats on the river. And all of a sudden, like, these Humvees came in, and it was special forces that came in. And I remember one of the interpreters was walking around, and he was all like, hey, good job, good job, good job. You guys got him, and good job. And we were like, huh? He's like, yeah, you guys, they caught Saddam. And so I remember we came back to our barracks, and we were all just sitting there, and we turned the TV on, and Donald Rumsfeld came on TV, and I remember those words. He was like, ladies and gentlemen, we got him. And I just remember that little room that we were in, we all just got up and started cheering and started giving each other high fives. And it was a very, very touching moment because we all were there. And so the next day, we were told that we had to provide perimeter around that area. And so we all got to actually go inside the hole where they took him out of, the little spider hole. We actually got to crawl in there and look around in there and take pictures and see where he was living and everything. And till they demolished that place.
You guys got to actually go where he was sitting.
Yeah, I actually crawled inside the little hole. So if you look on the internet, you'll see the special force sergeant pulling him out of that hole that they pulled him out of, right?
Yeah.
I actually have a picture of me standing in that exact same hole with my gun and everything.
Wow, what an amazing story for your family.
Yeah,
For your kids to have that history.
Yeah, and I remember we didn't really have a lot of good phone service and where we're at. And so I hadn't talked to my mom in like, I think it was like a little over a month. And she was back home, and all she saw was all the soldiers dying, all the fire and everything over there that was going on. So she hadn't heard from me in a while. She's telling me one day when I finally, years after I got out of the army, and she was all like, remember that day when you guys caught Saddam? And she's all like, well, 2 days before that, she's like, I was feeling all sad because I hadn't heard from you. And so I went to your grandpa's, and he did a prayer for me. And he was like, don't worry, he's still okay, and he'll be calling you soon.
Yeah, so she had them do a prayer probably for you too.
She had some prayers done when I was over there. And I wouldn't say I'm like a very spiritual person, but it was like a sense of calming knowing that people back home were having prayers done for you, for your protection. And I was experiencing firsthand, but they were experiencing through television. And so they were like worried about me the whole time. But at the time, I was like, oh, I can survive this. I can do this. I can do that. And not knowing what my mom and my family were going through back home, all worried about me, you know?
Yeah, I can understand that. And I think especially as a mother, you know, she's a hyper awareness of her children and, you know, just channeling and having hope that you're going to be okay through, you know, her efforts of like traditional Navajo prayers and people that would help. It's really good. You know, I mean, gosh, the overall experience just from that, Nate, it's like a movie. You have like a movie. I always tell Native artists, we should all write books. Or, you know, even if you're an artist, like you are a visual artist, you know, make some books for kids about your experience, you know, like what you just told me. I could see that as a children's book, right? Just to talk about your life as a young Navajo man and then making decisions to go to the army. And so while you were in the military, whether it was you're in basic training or when you actually went across the ocean, you know, to Baghdad, at that time, were you doing art or did you ever like still dabble in the arts?
So when I was actually in the army and when I was in Iraq, I did a lot of these drawings on envelopes and I used to send them to family and friends, and I was just, every day I was drawing, I would send a letter, and it was kind of like a storytelling letter, because I would draw things that were going on at the moment. Like, I remember after we crossed the Dom, I did a drawing of Calvin and Hobbes on the back of the envelope, and they were pulling a wagon, and I had a character that looked like Saddam that was all wrapped up, and they were pulling the wagon. Just things like that. I did a lot of drawings at those storytellings because I felt like I couldn't write it down. I couldn't tell them, like, oh, yeah, this is what happened. This one. So I would do it in drawings. And so I was sending a lot of drawings back home like that. And later on down the years, when I enrolled at UNM, I found out that those were considered war letters and war drawings. I did a lot of drawings when I was in Iraq, and I don't know where all those drawings are now, but...
Oh, gosh, you should find them. That's interesting that you say that, Nate, because as I know, and the people don't know, but you're what is known as a ledger artist, would you say?
Well, I recently just started doing ledger art.
Yeah, and you know, using envelopes, that's kind of like ledger art in a way, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, when I go to do art shows and I tell people, they ask me, like, what made you start doing ledger art? And I tell them, it's not because we as Navajos, we also have a story to tell. We also have a moment in history that we like to express. And that's why I'm doing ledger art now, is because I'm using the date, the titles, and things on the paper to tell stories that were going on at that moment in time in Navajo history. Just like when I was in Iraq, I was telling a story of the moment in time when I was in the military and when I was in Iraq and when I was getting blown up or when I was getting shot at, I was doing stories with my drawings. And so that's what I'm doing now with my artwork. Like when people see it in person and they hear the story of what I'm doing, that's when they catch their attention. They're like, oh, wow. Like, I did not realize like that. I did not know that. But when people see it, Without hearing the story, they're just like, oh, that's a nice drawing. But when they hear the story behind it, they're like, oh, wow, that's when it catches their attention.
Your ledger art is a moment in time. And that's really true, you know, because for you, finding ways to be creative in a place that's very violent and very traumatic and during war, you know, you found a place, a moment in time where you could have calmness in writing on those letters and envelopes, you know, and that really, really brings me to think about how is it now for you as a mature man and an artist and an ex-vet to look at, you know, art in your life? Why do you think art is, you know, important and very significant in your life now, thinking about your past experiences?
For me, art is important right now because that's what keeps me from turning to drugs and what keeps me from turning to alcohol. And so I use art as a way to express myself and to express my emotions and everything I went through in the military. I use that as a way to push myself to do more art. And so it keeps me from going to the bad side, as you would say, because when I got out of the military, I did, as you would say, a downhill slope, because I was doing a lot of drugs and a lot of alcohol, and it was just all bad downhill. And then I eventually met my wife, and then we had kids. And at that moment, I was like, you know what? I need another outlet. I can't do this no more. I can't be drinking no more, and I can't be doing all these drugs. And so and my wife was like, well, you should go to school and see what you can become. And so then I enrolled at UNM, and then I graduated with a bachelor's and everything in arts. And I remember that feeling of calmness, that feeling of, oh, I can do this, and just helping me tell stories again through my drawings. And so that's the reason why I do a lot of art now, is to keep me from going back down the dark road again.
I honestly believe that art does heal people, and you're a prime example. And, you know, we as Navajo people, we've always been artists, you know, no matter if we went to school or not. I feel like we just have this innate talent to be creative. It's great that, you know, you were doing those things, you know, even before you went to school to get your bachelor's of arts degree. You know, Nate, one of the important things I like to ask, you know, my guests, especially the Native people, is that, you know, how does your art, in your opinion, sustain or like help keep intact the whole way of the arts in the Navajo life? You know, because when I look at what your subject matter is, when you paint paint your work. A lot of it has to do with like family oriented or looking at, you know, the positives in life of a Navajo person, Navajo family. Do you choose that on purpose, what your subject matter is?
When it comes to my art, I just kind of go with the moment. Some days I'll just be sitting there and I'm like, oh, I'm going to draw this. Or I'm going to paint this. And I just kind of go with it and just paint it and just do it really quick before I lose. Spurt moments where I get an idea and I just hurry up and have to just draw it out really fast or paint it really fast. So it's not really just, I don't really plan what I'm going to do out, what I'm going to draw or what I'm going to paint anything. It's just kind of moments of that happen. It's, oh, that's what I'm going to do.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, when you find papers that are specific to something you want to draw, like you did that one where you had a marriage certificate. Can you talk about that one?
I got a marriage certificate, and so what am I going to draw on it? And then I remember growing up, my grandma was married, but she had lost her husband. And then so all my other grandmas and my nollies, they were still committed to their husband and to their wives. It's kind of like a love that will, eternal love that will last forever. It's hard to find nowadays. And so that's the reason why I started doing these marriage licenses, because it represents like the grandmas and the grandpas that came before us, where they found eternal love. And so that's the reason why I started doing them on marriage license. It reminds me of my grandparents.
Okay. Yeah, their relationship.
Growing up, you don't see a lot. Like, you know, you never see a lot of, like, grandparents struggle. Like, it always seems that they had it made and they knew what they were doing and they provided everything for you, whether it was through the sheep or the rug making, everything.
I know what you mean. It's just, you know, that sort of connection that, you know, they always will carry. And, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, is great about your experience, Nate, and your overall art and military experience is, you know, you are a very thoughtful person, it seems like, and you understand how a history of a person is so important to how we live now, especially as Navajo people, you know, because we do have a lot of Native people and Navajo people that join the military for protecting the land. And, you know, and I think that's important that, you know, you are there and you're depicting these images of Navajo people, because we're still here, we're still thriving, you know, and we still have social ills. We have alcoholism and domestic violence, but we still kind of go through. And I've always thought that, you know, we use art as a therapy or as like a way of expressing our mental, physical or spiritual state. Yeah, you know, and it just seems like that you're doing really well with, you know, how you're using art to help you, you know, post-military, because that experience is always going to be with you for your whole life. What is your next steps in your art?
I like the way I'm going with my art right now as far as storytelling and doing moments and times from Navajo history. And like I did a drawing the other day of a man on a horse. It's on a railroad certificate, and the train is going by behind him. And so that reminded me of the time when I joined the military, and I just kind of like just went off on my own. And so that's why this man, the painting I did was the man is by himself, but he's draped in an American flag.
I just really appreciate you coming and talking to me today about, you know, your experience as a veteran, as an artist, and, you know, still keeping connections to, you know, all your life and your past knowledge and putting it into your art. It just seems like you're very grounded in what you're doing. So do you have a place where people can maybe look at your art online?
Right now, all I have is Instagram. If you go on to Instagram, you can either put in Nate Naz or you can put in Navajo Khalifa.
Well, gosh, it's so good to talk to you, Nate, and I wish you the best in your new endeavors. And we look forward to seeing you and more of your art in the future, especially here in the Four Corners. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you again. Oh, no, yeah. Thank you for the opportunity. And I really look forward to the episode comes out. And so thank you again for giving me the opportunity to speak about my art and my military history.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you again for listening to Native Art Veterans of the Four Corners. And we will see you again next time. Hagoana.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.